Debt has been a lot in the news lately, hasn't it? And I don't want to get into the whole politics behind that, other than to say that when you incur debt, you're pulled in that direction, right? When you take out a loan, a bank sort of has a rope and is pulling you to make sure that they get their money with interest, right? Well, we are debtors, as the Apostle Paul starts out. We are debtors. But it depends upon who we see our ultimate indebtedness as to. Is our indebtedness ultimately to our earthly existence? Our, in Greek, the word is our sarx, our sometimes translated as our flesh. You know, but this is the way we do business in this world. This is basically how we operate. Our fleshly existence is not just necessarily the things we first think of when we think of the word flesh. Apostle Paul is trying to posit before us two possibilities. The possibility of life that is centered in our earthly existence, which focuses upon our inadequacies, that focuses upon the ways in which we fall short, that focuses upon rules and regulations and boundaries and things that are necessary to live in this earthly existence, this fleshly existence. Are we going to be pulled in that direction, or are we going to be pulled in a different way? Pulled in the direction of the Spirit and the kingdom and God. We are debtors, the Apostle Paul says, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. And you know, when we think about this, we think about the, you know, the boundaries, the rules and regulations that are necessary to live this life. You know what I mean? Even the law of God, which was given to us as a way of living in this world. Yet, as the Apostle Paul in other places made so abundantly clear, even the law as we received it had a way of pulling us away from God. As we sought to live up to the law, the letter rather than the spirit behind it. As the Apostle Paul says it, that the problem with the law itself, which was given to us as a blessing, and it's a necessary part, as all laws are, a necessary part of living in this life, the problem with that is that it leads us in a strange direction. For example, how many of you, and jumping out of God's law and talking about the laws of the state, how many of you, when you're driving down the freeway, how many of you drive 65 miles an hour, if the sign says so, or less? And how many of you add a little weight onto the accelerator? I won't ask for a show of hands. Okay. Sometimes the very law pulls us in the direction of breaking it, right? There's a stretch on Cub Hill Road that I got a ticket on once because I did not slow down to 25 miles an hour and rounded the corner, and there was the faithful trooper. Yeah. I tried driving 25 miles around that corner and it felt like I was crawling. The law itself, in many ways, leads us to break it. Okay, those of you who have raised children, when you have given a rule, you should not do this, What is the very thing a child wants to do? Right? Okay. Pulling in that direction. As the Apostle Paul got much more serious about that, he said, the law leads to sin and sin leads to death. And, it's a kind of a downward spiral that just kind of pulls you right into the grave. Okay. The Apostle says, you're not debtors to that. You're not debtors to that. Instead, you're debtors to the Spirit, which is pulling you in a different direction. So live as those who are indebted to the Spirit, which is pulling you out of the grave and up that ladder, if you will, pulling you in God's direction. The Apostle Paul, goes on and talks about how, we're not locked into, if you will, a slavery. And as he spoke those things, I'm sure there were some folks in his original audience, and there should be some of us now who have read, the story of God's people and know that with Jacob's family ended up, and it was actually a good thing that they eventually ended up in Egypt, but that tended to be their undoing, because they wound up in slavery in Egypt. And God needed to kind of pull them out with the help of, his servant Moses. Pull them into the promised land, into the wilderness, and eventually into the promised land. Now, we don't have a spirit of slavery. Slavery that is based on fear. And the law itself, face it. When we're driving down the highway, what is it that keeps us within the speed limit, ultimately? The fear of that little red light behind us. Driving out to annual conference, I may have gone a little bit faster at times. And, driving down and all of a sudden, there on the right, there'd be a cop. And what was the first reaction? You let off the accelerator. You slow down. It's fear. Fear. We are not given a spirit of fear. What is it that Paul says elsewhere in his letter to Timothy, his second letter to Timothy? We have not been given a spirit of fear or timidity, but rather a spirit of power and of love and I like the King James here, and a sound mind. Gifts of God, right there. We have not been given a spirit of fear, but a spirit of slavery, but a spirit of adoption. Paul jumps into, he's shifting metaphor. He does that an awful lot. He shifts from slavery to adoption. Now, back in those days, you could get into slavery in a number of ways. One, a foreign army could capture your land and just drag you away to their place and put you into slavery. But you could also end up in slavery because of debt. Once upon a time, even here, there were debtors' prisons, weren't there? You could, if you owed somebody money, you could lose your freedom and become their servant, their slave, because of debt, kind of pulled into it. But Paul shifts, and I hope you hear the grinding of that shift away from, looking at family with, here's the family here with their slaves over on the side, to adoption. That you're a part of the family. And that you're not just a part of the family now, not simply no longer a slave and a part of the family, but you have a share of the inheritance of the family. You are an heir. Like Jesus, because of Jesus. You're joint heirs with Christ. Of course, then Paul gets into talking about suffering. And he links in with the suffering that creation is experiencing. And let's face it, suffering is a part of our human existence. none of these bodies that we possess, none of these bodies are going to last forever. Oh yes, we may at a certain point, you know, be, you know, are improving and growing and stuff like this until that magic point, and I don't know where it is. It's somewhere in the 20s, right? Where that point at which all of a sudden, you know, they talk about it going over the hill. That's where it comes. We go over the hill and we start the downward slide, which can be a very depressing thought. But not if we take care of our bodies, right? Now, last night, okay, those of you who were at the Orioles game last night, who all here was at the Orioles game? I didn't see everybody. Okay. Do you remember that point between innings when they had that segment on the big screen, Ask an Oriole? Do you remember that? They had Ask an Oriole, and the question was, what would you eat for the rest of your life? Do you remember that? Was that the question? What would you eat for the rest of your life? Okay, what were their answers? Was broccoli on the list? No, it was like steak, pizza, macaroni. I love the one that said bananas. Of course, you got down to the end, you realized that this was really a commercial. I mean, as they all were, because that's the way things operate. You know, I had a guy lifting up a particular meal that he really said that he got at Chili's, you know, particular dish. You know, you realized when you got there that you'd been had. But ultimately, okay, let's say for the rest of your life, every day you eat steak or you eat pizza. Okay, where's Gail? Okay, if you eat steak or you eat pizza or all that for the rest of your life, what's going to happen? What? You gain weight. But what else? As somebody who works with the heart people. The rest of your life isn't as long as you thought it would be. Exactly. Okay. Well, we do take care of that. I mean, there are significant rules for, you know, how we can take care of our bodies, yes. But none of us is going to forestall the inevitable, right? I mean, we may get like Willard on the Today Show where they're talking about those who turned 100 and some odd. But, you know, I don't hear any 130, 150, 100, right? Okay. Eventually. And our, you know, God's creation has been subjected to suffering, whether we talk about it and, you know, in terms of just that's the way things are, or whether we get into that whole territory of global warming or whatever, and the things that we have done on the environment. And I don't want to get into that issue, but just, and I love how the Apostle Paul brings this in, and certain translations pick this up, that all of creation, everything else beside us, and it's not all about us, please understand that, it's not all about us. But, you know, all of creation is just waiting. All of creation is just, one translation says it's on tiptoe, peeking over, just waiting to see, waiting for the sons and daughters of God to come into their own. But until then, with, you know, suffering and stuff like this, it's like, and here's where Paul shifts metaphors again. He does that all through. I mean, he's a wonderful metaphor shifter. He shifts into, well, did you hear it? Labor pains. Now, here is a man bringing in a woman's experience. I mean, what does he know about labor pains? You know, some of you know about labor pains. And the whole process of birth rather than death. But you catch what he's doing here. You know, the life in the flesh is pulling us down into the grave. But the life in the spirit is bringing about birth. And you know that when there is birth, it doesn't happen all at once. I mean, there's conception, but you know, you got to wait a while, right? It doesn't, I mean, some of us wish it would happen like that, but you know, it takes, what, 9 months, you know, and there's, you know, this, and this is from the guy's point of view. We see what's on the outside, and we listen, well, sometimes better than others, to what's happening on the inside. But some of us know that experience from the inside. But it doesn't happen all at once, and there's a growing little by little by little by little, and then comes the time of deliverance. But the time of deliverance, well, maybe sometimes it happens fairly quickly, but often it takes a long time. And it's painful. I mean, it's painful. You know, I went through this four times. I didn't experience the pain, but I listened to it. And I was there. And you sort of wonder why you do this. Until. And then it's all worthwhile. It's all worthwhile. That is the penultimate image he has here for us. This life in the Spirit is like that. How we're waiting. And part of our waiting involves pain and suffering. You know, I think of some of our friends and dear ones who've gone through difficult times, and how we have sought to shift that, seeing it in this way. It's being pulled upward into the arms of God. But it's a matter of hope. And hope, as the Apostle Paul clearly stated, isn't in all the tangible stuff that we can touch and things we can see. Because if it were solely dependent upon what we can see, I mean, because that is basically life in the flesh. That is life in our human existence. That, you know, I got to see it to believe it. But if you got to see it to believe it, then you never get there. Because there's a certain point over which you're treading territory you've never traveled. And you got to take some leaps and bounds of faith and travel by hope. And you don't hope for what you see. You hope in what you don't see. And while you hope, you wait. And then he brings up that word that we struggle so hard with. You wait with patience. And I say that not as somebody to say, you know, throw it on top of you and say, be patient. Because you can't do that. Patience is only something you learn from the inside. As you give birth through God's Spirit to life. Abundant life in Christ.